Alrighty, James. 78 games in the books as we record this. Obviously, the Leafs will play on Thursday, so that'll be 79, and then they'll play on Saturday, and that's 80, and so on and so forth.
Let's do the whole way, and then
yeah, play should be okay.
Tuesday,
yeah.
81.
And then yeah, okay.
Wednesday, 82, and then the next game they play after that will probably be on a Saturday, and that'll be game number one.
Oh, nice! I love this. We should do this every show. Just count.
We could just keep going and go all the way. Yeah.
Well.
28 games of the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, Leaf fans would love it if it was like that. Maybe it will. We will see. We'll talk about playoffs next week, obviously. But there is lots to talk about. I was surprised at like how many things I think are interesting right now. Obviously, I think we have to start with the most... Interesting, most exciting, most incredible... Not home ice for the Leafs, potentially, but Auston Matthews now at 66 goals. I feel like we can't talk about this enough or like can't make a big enough deal of it because it is such a big deal. You know what I mean?
It seems like maybe people are tired of it or it's just, I don't know. I guess because 2 years ago he had the big year and won the Hart and it's kind of taken for granted a little bit, maybe. Like, I don't know that it's getting as much attention as it should be.
You don't think so?
66? Yeah, I don't know.
Someone had a tweet yesterday
that I think is right, that it said if Matthews played in a different market, then it would be treated differently. Like, there's just so many people that get tired of hearing about the Leafs and don't like the Leafs that I think that there's some pushback on when something legitimately amazing national story happens around the Leafs. I think there's still a tendency, especially in Canada, from other fan bases to not want to hear about it.
Do you think it's like, oh, it's just the Leafs, you're just blowing it out of proportion, it's not that big a deal?
I mean, that's what people say, but then it's like I remember the last time someone had 66 goals was Mario Lemieux, who was my favorite player, and that season he had, the 95-96 season, was unbelievable. You know, it was like one of the best seasons ever. And Matthews is potentially going to be able to surpass that. Like it's amazing. I mean, we're talking about him in the context of you watch the grainy footage of like Solani getting the 76 goals and McGillney. And like, it's so long ago. Like there's so many Leafs fans and probably people listening to the show who weren't born when those seasons happened. And who he's catching up to in a much different scoring environment. And, you know, if people didn't see it, Dom's story on our site last night looked at the historical context and basically said that what Matthews is doing is the fourth or fifth or sixth most impressive goal scoring season in league history, which is pretty amazing.
Well, I think there is, or we are generally like as a hockey community or whatever you want to call it, doing a better job of contextualizing it like that. Like, I think there might have been a time, I don't know, 15 years ago where it's like, well, 66, but, you know, the record's 92. And it's like, I think like there's a better understanding of how rare it is, like that this hasn't happened. Obviously, Ovechkin had 65, but nothing like this. And obviously, he's getting closer to 70. And like you and I have been pointing out in conversations and obviously online, like, how rare it is to get this many goals. Like he's the 11th player ever to get 66. Only 8 players have ever scored 70. And he's doing it, you know, in a season where they need it. Like you look at some of these goals he's scoring them at important times. Like he's dragging them back into it. Do you think, I can't remember if we talked about this on the pod, but do you think it'll take 70 for people to be convinced that he should win the Hart? Like if he has 68, do you think that will change for people in other markets? Like, do you think that anti-Toronto thing will become kind of a thing with voters?
This is a weird year for the Hart because, and it's a weird year for Matthews too, with his assist total being where it is. Like I honestly kind of feel like he's not going to win it no matter what. I don't know if you think that's a hot take, but I don't think Matthews is going to win the Hart. You know, he won it 2 years ago. There's other players with, 30, 35 more points than he's got. And regardless if he gets to 70, I think without 70, I think he gets a lot fewer votes. I think if he gets 70, I could see him being the runner up. I don't see him winning. I think McKinnon's going to win the Hart this year.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Like, I think it's possible he won't even be a finalist, which is incredible.
Who's going to push him out though? Like, I think it's going to be McKinnon, Matthews, McDavid are going to be the top three.
I think that's what it should be, but I think there will be a lot of voters who will look at Kucherov and look at his team and look at his points. And not that that's wrong. Like, I wouldn't have him in the top three, but I think it's possible. Like, I mean, do you think his season should be like, what is a more valuable season? What he's done for the Leafs or what McKinnon has done for the Avs?
I mean, the interesting wrinkle is that Kucherov leads the league in scoring right now, right? So, and that tends to get a lot of hard votes no matter what. So Kucherov's at 139, McKinnon 137, McDavid at 130. Then you got Panarin 116, Pastrnak 107, and then Matthews is sixth in league scoring at 104 points. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Hart voting historically, it really tracks the scoring race closely.
Yes.
You know, there aren't very many. So you could be right. Kucherov could get, if he ends up at the top in points, that's probably going to buy him a lot more votes. Rightly or wrongly. I think that's going to be. So I don't think Matthews is going to win the Hart. I don't. I think he's probably got a better chance to win the Selke than to win the Hart.
That's interesting.
I think he's going to be a finalist for both of them. It would be my prediction.
Do you think this season defensively is better than the one 2 years ago? Because I actually think that season was better in terms of the defensive impact. Now you could make a lot of different arguments as to like the quality of teammates, quality of defensemen on this team, quality of line mates. He finished.
I think he's played harder defensive situations this year though, right? Like that's part of the argument.
Yeah, sort of. But the last month, his line is also not matching up with other top lines. He's getting tons of offensive zone starts. He finished 10th for the Selke that season. That's nuts.
Yeah, he should have been higher. It's the penalty killing thing. I mean, maybe I'm wrong that he's going to be a finalist for the Selke. I think he should be. But I know that some voters, if you're not on the penalty kill, one of the top two units, they don't get voted. So we'll see.
Well, is there anything more to add? Like as to the historical context, like you want to add any more weight to it? Convince people why it's so special. I think like people listening to this podcast will understand why it's so special.
He's one goal away now from tying the most even strength goals in Maple Leafs history, right?
Yes, he has 272. Matt Sundin has 273, which is nuts when Matt Sundin played like 400 and something more games.
Yeah, like the numbers are just incredible. And so I tweeted at one point that he was close to getting the even strength goal record. And then I was getting stuff from other fan bases saying, yeah, it's because the Leafs historically haven't had good players. And it's like, well, that's not really true. I mean, in some cases, they didn't have good players for that long. But if you look at the list of the all-time leading goal scorers, you know, say the top 100 goal scorers in NHL history, there's a lot of players that played for the Leafs on that list. What Matthews is doing is just, like, he's scoring at a faster pace than Ovechkin in the same number of games.
Well, and to your point,
Ovechkin's going to break the all-time record that no one thought would ever be broken.
Well, I'm glad you brought up, yes. I mean, and Ovechkin obviously topped out at 65. He only scored 60 once that 1 year. Matthews obviously already has two of those. I'm glad you brought up the even strength thing because that was part of Dom's story, just how much harder it is to score even strength goals. Right now, as we record this today, Matthews has 49 even strength goals on the season. That's the 11th highest total in NHL history right now. The record is Gretzky was 68, but obviously that's a different era. That's 81, 82. And, you know, most of those seasons are, all of those seasons were when scoring was high. That's the crazy thing about this. But then again, like you look on the power play, he scored obviously a couple of power play goals down the last little bit. He's shooting like 27% at last check on the power play, which is the highest of his career. He's shooting 19.6%, I think, for the season, which is the highest of his career, which brings me to what I wanted to ask you about. One of the things I think that's going to get talked about more and more here, depending on how things go, depending on how much he scores in the next couple games, is whether they should rest him in one of those final two games. Where do you stand on this? Like, if he's at 68 or whatever, Like if he's in the ballpark,
there's no chance.
No chance he rests.
I think the only resting he might potentially do is one of those Florida games.
Yeah,
probably, that's what we're talking about. That's probably the only, like, they're not going to sit him more than that. And if he's close to 70, I don't think there's no chance he's going to want to sit. No way. So if he wants to play, are you going to force him to sit, even though you don't, you know, even though he's desperate to try and do it? I don't think so. I think the thing you could do, Jonas, is you could dress him and just play him 14 minutes and, you know, put him on the first power play unit and, you know,
yeah,
that's one thing. That's one way you could rest him.
That's not a bad keeping him in idea.
I think if he's, this is unrealistic, but if he's at 66 and it comes down to the final game, then maybe you've got a case.
Yes.
Or if he's already got to 70, then obviously you could sit him for that last game.
Well, so I wrote about this today for The Athletic, and that is literally one of the lines in my story. If he's at 66, like, and it's game 82, I don't think he's playing. I will read you this quote from Sheldon Keefe. He was asked about this earlier this month. Quote, "I'm not concerned about 70 goals at all. I'm concerned about having him and our team ready to go for playoffs. That is not our focus, not my focus at all." And he was referencing, obviously, 70 goals.
It shouldn't be the coach's focus, though, right? Like, that's not his job.
No. But, I mean, there's an argument that the more important thing is obviously having him ready to go for the playoffs. Now, I would say, is sitting him in one game going to make him that much more rested for the playoffs? Probably not. I would add, though, James, like, he has never played this many minutes in a season total. Like, he's way over his previous high. So there's that. But, like, I don't think you're changing that in one game. I think you're right. I think you leave it up to Matthews. If he says he wants to go for it, if he hasn't got there already, you let him go for it. If he says, you know, I'll rest, I'll rest.
He's going to want to play.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think you're right. I mean, it's such an insane number. And I think one of the things that I've been thinking about, James, and I'm glad, like, you brought up some of the historical weight of it, is, like, he might not get this chance again. Like, I think we assume that. And, you know, he's been healthy. The shooting percentage is high. You just have to factor all those things in, I think.
I mean, health is going to be the only thing, because, you know, there's a world where Matthews is knocking on the same door that Ovechkin's knocking on. But the crazy thing with Ovechkin is he's just missed so few games and he's been able to play and just been a machine.
Yeah.
You know, Ovechkin hit 30 goals last night, and I think it's 18 seasons with 30 goals. Like, that's just completely bananas. Like,
it's absurd.
Yeah. It seems impossible. Seems impossible. But the interesting thing is that Matthews could get 60. You know, he could have 60 another, like, four or five more times. I mean, he's still a young man. So,
well, and if I'm not mistaken, this is off the top of my head, I think the record is 5. I think Bossy and Gretzky each had 5 60 goal seasons.
Hmm.
So that's not out of the question. That's a lot. Obviously, he has 2 now, but he's only 26. Like, so we'll see. I do think one more Matthews thing we should get to before we dive into some other topics. I wasn't convinced that they were going to be serious with this line that they've been using with Bertuzzi and Domi. Obviously, with Marner back, you know, I thought eventually, and I still think eventually, that's probably the way it's going to go. But the more it goes on and they're just really impactful, the more I wonder if they start thinking about, does this work having Marner play elsewhere? And is it worth it? Because I think one of the downsides of the way they're doing it now is you're just not playing Marner as much. You're not playing Nylander as much. But that line has just been it's got so much juice right now. Do you see, like, potential for that in game one?
I do. And I wonder if the thing that I worry about with the way it is now is that Nylander's getting lost a little bit and hasn't really, like, you want him going when the playoffs start. And I think he's got, he doesn't have a goal in the last 5 games, right? And he's only got 2 points. Like, you don't want him to be ice cold going into the playoffs. And they've got 4 games to get that figured out. But isn't the easy solution, Jonas, to what you're talking about? Couldn't you put Nylander with Tavares and Marner? Like, couldn't you stack that line and have those 3 together? I know they haven't played together that much. I know Nylander hasn't played a ton of left wing, but that could be one way to do it.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up. That is something that they're dabbling a little bit with of late. They dabbled with it in the New Jersey game. I don't hate it. I kind of like the potential. I think it forces the opposing head coach into a difficult decision because you're always going to want to use your best guys against Matthews. But suddenly if the other line has like three all-stars on it, two of the better offensive forwards in the league in Marner and Nylander, I don't know that it's totally worked. Like it's almost like Nylander and Marner both need the puck to be effective. So you kind of lose a little bit of something from both. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the Nylander thing, it's a good way to frame it. Like you don't want him going in not feeling great about himself. Obviously, he still hasn't hit 100 points. He's getting closer, but he hasn't had the kind of the same pop that he had before. But like Domi has brought such a, like he just brings such a dimension to that line in terms of setting up Matthews. Like their chemistry, it's been something. Like right away when they started playing together, you could see it, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And then there's the other part of this, which we were going to get to later, but we can get to now, is they've been using Tavares basically as like their matchup guy, which is not something surprising. I would have ever predicted in his age 33-year-old season, but it's kind of been working. I mean, is that realistic, like for a playoff series to use him against? I mean, that's the thing. Like you look ahead to Florida and it's like, well, what line are you wanting to match with? Like, do you want Tavares playing against Barkov and Verhaeghe on the top line, assuming Verhaeghe is healthy? Do you want Matthews going against Tkachuk? Like, I don't know. Like it does create some flexibility and it frees Matthews up from having to play the hardest minutes and matchups.
Yeah. And the thing too about the Tavares line is if he's got Marner there helping him, that elevates how good that line is defensively. And you know, McMahon's a good defensive player as well. So it's more than just who the center is. And I think it gives Florida a tougher decision on, I mean, they're going to, you'd think they would still want Barkov against Matthews regardless.
Yes, for sure.
So then that creates an interesting, you know, they'll kind of be chasing each other with who's playing against who in the different games in the series.
And that's a good point, especially with the timing of things. Obviously, the Leafs can still catch Florida and still win home ice advantage. If they do, then the decision might become a little different going into game one. If they don't, you probably just roll with this, like, or some version of this. I guess the only other thing that concerns me is I think it asks too much of Pontus Holmberg. I don't think he, and to your point about Nylander, like he's not enough for Nylander. He's not enough for that kind of role. And that's the problem with having Domi up there is like suddenly you have Pontus Holmberg in basically his first NHL season playing third line center.
Well, not to beat a dead horse too much, but this is why they needed another center, right? Like if you had another center who fit in your top nine, then you could do this, you know, and you could even, you'd have a bunch of different options if you had another center. Like if you had like a Wennberg, like who the Rangers picked up at the deadline, you know, I think that that's what this forward group needed. So can you go into the playoffs and can you win in the playoffs with Holmberg as your third line center and Kamp as your fourth line center? And now yesterday, you know, Kamp plays 16 minutes and Holmberg plays 12 and change. So you can argue even that Holmberg's line is the fourth line, but then you've got Nylander on your fourth line. That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, you know, but they've been trying to find ice time for him, power play, penalty kill, if they need a goal. Some of it's situational too, right? Like I think Keith's well known for creating lines based on, you know, different lines for when you're trailing versus when you're leading. And that makes sense. And that's why you see such a scramble with who he uses game to game and like shift to shift.
Yes. You're right. And like, I thought McMahon didn't totally have it against Jersey. And so you saw a little bit more Marner playing with Tavares and Nylander. So maybe that's like, to your point before, that's something that they dabble with. I mean, we have seen some version of this before. I think it was the 22 playoffs where Nylander would start playoff games with Kampf. And it wasn't really a real thing. Like they would literally play like a couple shifts together and then he would move up and play with with Tavares. So maybe that's something, but a lot of this, they have such a difficult decision with the center ice situation. And then obviously they have Cale Järnkrok that they have to factor into this. If he is ready for game one, like suddenly you need a spot in the top nine theoretically for him.
Yeah, I don't know where that is. Where do you think that, and who do you move down? And who do you move? I guess Robertson's probably the one that comes out of the lineup, right?
Well, but so Dewar didn't play in that Jersey game. He's going to play. Mm-hmm. So Reeves goes in, I would think, for Gregor. Or like maybe Reeves is the guy who comes out when Yarncroc is healthy. That's a really interesting situation for them. And we were going to get to this later, but we can get to it now. Injuries at this time of year, they really kind of screw with you. Like we've seen this before where guys come back like right at the start of the playoffs. It's not great. Like they're not ready, you know, like
and they're not mixed in.
Yes. But what do you do?
Well, I think if Yarncroc's ready for game one, which he plays, from what I've heard, he's going to be that. Yeah, you play him.
Yes. And I guess where do you play him becomes a question. I guess a lot of that will depend on like, what are your bottom two lines looking like? Like, are you playing Pontus Holmberg there? I guess the other thing is like, is it Domi has looked better on the wing with Matthews? That's for sure. Is it putting him in a tough spot if suddenly with like a game left, you move him back to center and like now he's playing with totally different line mates and he's used differently and he's not playing as much? Like that's one of the things with Domi. Now he's playing a lot and he wasn't playing a lot when he was playing center. Like he would play 9 minutes one night and 13 minutes and then he plays 16 minutes and now he's playing a bunch more and obviously that's going to help him feel better and there's ramifications to that. So it's interesting. Like I think it's unusual that we are so close to the playoffs and we have no idea what their lineup is going to look like. And I'm sure they have no idea.
Well, it gives us a little bit of intrigue to talk about.
Yes.
And, yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We also have a bunch of questions to get to. We have more lineup and Nylander and what else is on my list here? Brody, Robertson, lots to talk about.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to talk about Robertson first off. It's really nuts like how he's been able to score. Like it's not a ton of goals, but like when you factor in his ice time, he doesn't play on the power play really. I don't know what it means like for this year. I think it's more like something to think about in the future when he's a little older, a little more experienced, gets better defensively. But I think there's a world, absolutely. I don't know what percentage you put on it, where he doesn't play game one, but at some point in the first round or whenever, not even because of injuries, he gets into the lineup. Do you think that's crazy or do you think it's possible?
I would think it would more likely be injuries, but then again, maybe they start the playoffs and they want Reeves there just as a deterrent or, you know, like as kind of like a part of the arms race or whatever. And then maybe that doesn't materialize. And then you feel better about going with more of a skilled lineup deeper in the series. But I kind of think that Robertson's going to be like the 13th forward. And if someone gets hurt, he comes into the lineup. You know, I think he's had a fine season, you know, like it feels like with Robertson, the expectations were the thing that was way out of whack. If you go back, you know, 2 years ago and, you know, I think he's turning into what he was going to turn into and his development path has been fine. The injuries, obviously huge roadblocks for him, but credit to him for persevering through that and getting to here. And, you know, I think he's going to be cheap next year, cost controlled. I think you pencil him in for a third line role next year and play him a little bit more regularly. And I don't know about the playoffs though. I mean, I don't see him in the top 12. I don't know who you sit out of this group, especially if you're going to keep Domi up with Matthews, then you probably need to play Holmberg because you need that him as a center. And there's just not going to be enough spots.
Yeah, it's fair. Like I actually think he's probably the 14th forward when they're healthy. Holmberg and Reeves being 11 and 12, like you got to factor Yarncroc in there, assuming he's healthy. I just could see a scenario where they're struggling to score for whatever reason. I mean, maybe they don't. They score a ton, but obviously they haven't scored a ton in the playoffs, where they're struggling to score and they look at this guy who literally every time he gets a chance scores. Now, playoffs are obviously different. His play with the puck, his decision making, it would scare me if I was Sheldon Keefe. defensively, that would scare me a bit. But like there might just come a situation where they're like, you know what, we need a little bit more offense. We're just not getting enough beyond the obvious guys. I don't think it's likely, but I could see it. Like, he's done everything he can. And to your point, like, I think he's total now. He's played 83 NHL games, I think, which seems like not as much as you would think, given how long he's been around. And obviously, like, you go back to that series with Columbus when he's never played in the NHL and he scores one of their, I think they had 3 5-on-5 goals in that series. Anyway, I think it's an interesting development. Like, you're right, he's had a good year for what he's, for what he is, how inexperienced he is, how much injuries or how many injuries he's had. So good for him. Is there anything more on Nylander you want to mention? I think the other part that we didn't talk about is the power play has obviously struggled. He was a big part of the power play for much of the year, and that's been a source of a bunch of his production. So when that goes down, suddenly he's probably not feeling as good. He's not getting as many points there. And it just hasn't been as impactful, and he's been way overshadowed now by Matthews, obviously. And he still had, you know, the best season of his career.
I wondered, like, do you think Nylander is going to get to 100 points? Looks like that's, I mean, I know 70 goals is the bigger milestone that people are watching, but it felt like a given that a couple weeks ago Nylander would get to 100 points, and now he's 4 away with 4 games, and I don't know if he's going to do it or not.
Yeah, it feels that way. And like, I thought he would add 46, 47 goals. He's still stuck on 40. Obviously, he gets one taken back in Jersey, but, you know, is he going to break his career high? Is he going to get 41, 42, whatever he ends up with? Yeah, like it's just kind of been it felt like in the first half, everything was going for him. Obviously, highlighted by the trip to Sweden, where it was just like this great story. And then the second half, it's been a little less so. And we'll see what translates to the playoffs, because obviously of those 4 big stars, he's been the most impactful come playoff time. And that's obviously what they're going to want. They're going to want him providing another threat beyond Matthews. So
do you have a read on Jonas just being around the team and hearing from the players? Like, how do they feel about where the lineup's at right now? Like, does Nylander, is there any sign that he's not loving getting the demotion that he's got right now? Or is everyone fully bought in on this being the lineup?
He's not really that type, right? Like, that's the one that's one of the benefits of his personality. Is I don't think you could get away with this with Marner, or we saw Tavares earlier in the season when he was put on the third line. He didn't love that, understandably. Like, he's never been in that position before, probably in his life. Nylander's the one, like, I don't think that he sweats this stuff. Like, I think he's very sure of himself, secure in himself. Like, I don't think it bothers him. But I do think, like, the numbers matter to these guys. Like, he told me in, like, January that last year, like, he was thinking about 40 goals, and, like, that kind of got in his head, and he was connecting it to his contract. So, like, this stuff does matter, and you want him confident. You want him feeling good. And that's why, like, another argument for changing up the lines is getting him back with Tavares and just getting that feeling of confidence going for him heading into the playoffs. So that's another thing that they might factor. So there's a lot for them to contemplate. I think the other thing we should talk about is their defense. You highlighted it on the last podcast about Lyubushkin and some of the problems he was having with the puck. Obviously, it cost them a goal the other night. He didn't play in Jersey. You might be right. Like, there might be a world where he doesn't play game one, which I did not think a week ago.
Well, I think he's played his way. We'll see what happens with Edmondson and his health. I mean, that's the, like, they're not going to play Timmins in the playoffs. No. They're probably not going to play Giordano in the playoffs, right? So, but if Edmondson's ready, I would play him over Lyubushkin. I don't think Lyubushkin's been one of their best 6 defensemen. He played well when they first got him, but then there's been a pretty big fall off. And the thing I worry about with him is those passes to nobody that he has sometimes.
Yeah, but you got him not for the regular season. Like, you got him for the element that he brings in the playoffs, and expecting that to be a thing in the playoffs.
But you've got a lot of that, though. Like you've got that with, if Edmondson's healthy and you've got Benoit and you've got McCabe and you've got physicality, you know, like, I don't think you don't need every guy on the blue line to be that.
I think that's fair. It just, it then raises the question, okay, well, what are you doing with the pairs? Because what we saw in Jersey was like the old hat coming back out, and that's Riley Brody. And that's something I wanted to touch on. Brody's looked better. Like, Brody's kind of coming back around. He probably doesn't get back to the level that he was in previous seasons, but maybe that's something they contemplate, where they go back to Riley Brody. They stick with Benoit McCabe. That's starting to feel like a lock, which obviously complicates some things. And then maybe your third pair is like Edmondson, and I guess that would be Liljegren. Is that it?
If he was healthy, I'd like to see Edmondson play with Riley. But the problem is, we don't know what the injury is. He's had lots of health concerns the last few years. He's got back problems, which are relatively significant. And maybe that's what's flared up now. I mean, we're left to guess with the team not saying what it is. But I feel like that could potentially work, where Edmondson's in the Labushkin role. And again, you know, he's not the right shot, but he has played the right side in the past. And yeah, that would be what I would want to look at before the regular season's up, just to see if it works or not.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, he hasn't played the right all season. I don't love that idea, like, of him playing the right side at this point.
I just think he's better than Labushkin with where his game's at and where Labushkin's game's at right now.
Well, if I'm going to do that, then I may as well just play Brody there, would be my thinking if I were the coaching staff. No? Like,
if you feel like Brody's not going to be the guy that really, really struggled for so much. Like, Riley Brody just hasn't worked basically all year. Like, how many games have they played together and has it worked really, really well? Like,
did work the first couple months, and then it kind of slowly took a tumble.
And it also struggled in the playoffs last year too, right? Like,
no, they didn't play together in the playoffs, remember? Like,
Brody was with Ben.
Brody was with Abe.
Right.
I think that the subplot that deserves more attention is, like, Benoit has kind of played himself to being, I don't know if I'd call him a lock, but that's been their most reliable pair. And maybe they just get to game one and they're just like, how do we not play our most reliable pair in game one? And
no, I think that's, I don't know if that's in pen right now, but it's definitely in pencil as one of their three pairs right now. So. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like, the injury stuff, like, it really, like, we touched on it before, but Liljegren, this always is the thing, and it's not his fault. Like, it just gets in the way, where he gets hurt and then he comes back and it's not the same. And obviously he's kind of played his way in and out of the lineup at playoff time in each of the past couple of years. And he is the right shot, though. And obviously they don't have a ton of right shots. So that's something that they have to contemplate as well. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, health is going to dictate some of what they do in the back end, right? So we're kind of guessing I guess we can come up with some theories based on if everyone's healthy. But for me, if Liljegren and Edmondson are ready to go, then Labushkin's not in my top six, and you figure out the pairings after that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess we'll see. Like, I mean, the one thing we've seen with Keefe is he doesn't tend to stick with something if it doesn't work at all. So if it doesn't work in game one, whatever they do, he will change it for game two. It's funny, like, how he is so much the opposite that way. Like, him and Mike Babcock, his predecessor, are basically complete opposites on the spectrum, where Babcock is like, I'm sticking with this. This is what we do. And then Keefe is like the opposite, where one game, one period, it's not working. He goes back to the drawing board and tries something else. I'm still wondering about Marner. Yeah, I'm curious to see what they do in these final few games. And obviously the rest thing is going to be a thing, because if you look, like, we talk about Matthews, but they've rested other guys in games 81, 82 before. Like, it's not just going to be Matthews that rests. And, like, that's difficult when you're trying to establish continuity and chemistry and pairs and all that stuff. So before we get to questions, any thoughts on the goaltending? Like, is this over for you with it's just Samsonov now to start and then TBD?
Yeah. Failing an injury. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
No, I thought Wall was fine in New Jersey, but Samsonov's been pretty darn solid the last few weeks. So I think that any debate over who's starting game one is over. What do you do for, like, the last four games? You just split them?
Well, so they have Thursday, then they play Saturday, then they play Tuesday, and then Wednesday. So obviously the Tuesday, Wednesday, I think Samsonov Wall. I would think Samsonov starts Thursday. We're recording this on Wednesday. And then do you play Wall on Saturday?
Against Detroit, which is going to be a pretty competitive game with the Red Wings probably needing to win to make the playoffs. So you could look at it and say that's going to be the most playoff-like atmosphere. I wonder if the game against the Panthers matters, like for home ice, if they like how seriously they treat that game.
Yeah, I mean, it is the first game. So, I mean, if you're going to rest people and it's game 82 against Tampa, right? Like that's depending on what you're talking about with home ice. Like maybe if that's decided at that point. You just don't want, like the other thing is like you want your people to be in a groove. So suddenly if they don't play Wednesday, it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then you said the series will probably start on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe that doesn't matter, but I would factor it in. Okay, James, what have you got on the docket today?
What is on the docket, Jonas? Dustin says 70. Does he do it? What do you think? What do you put the odds at for Matthews to get to 70? I would not bet against him. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, he just looks like he's in like a real groove right now too, where every game it's feeling like he could have 2, 3, 4 when he, like, you know, when those grooves he's in, when it just feels like he's going to score every single night. I mean, there was a stretch not that long ago where he was kind of fighting it a little bit. The puck wasn't going in. Chances were there, but not like this. I think he gets it. I think, I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll even crack like past 70 and get like 71. Like it just kind of feels like 70, it's 75? Happening.
75? Can he get 75?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, and all it's going to take is one game where he has two goals and all of a sudden it feels like it's pretty easy for him. So, and New Jersey looks like they looked pretty checked out in the game yesterday. I mean, I don't know how much of a fight they're going to, you know, maybe you get the backup goalie tomorrow when you got a team that's got a lot of injuries. They just shut down Jack Hughes. Like they're done playing for anything. So I could see Matthews getting two tomorrow.
Well, and suddenly
that's my prediction.
Suddenly also, James, like they have their number one power play unit back and it hasn't looked amazing. They haven't had a ton of reps together, obviously, but suddenly the power play is a thing for him. He went, I think we touched on it last week. He went like a month plus without scoring on the power play. Suddenly he's getting some looks on the power play. That helps. Obviously, we mentioned the Domi Bertuzzi thing. That helps. Maybe he gets... Did you care that they didn't put him on the ice to get an empty netter in that Jersey game? Do you think they should have?
I think they should have. Yeah, I was a bit confused why they didn't. Was that like a fatigue thing or... I don't know. It felt weird. And they were shooting at the empty net from like their own end as well, which also felt like you're up by two. Why not just stick handle the puck around a little bit in the neutral zone, get Matthews out there and let him tap it in?
I guess like you can't have it both ways. You can't say that like they need to manage his ice time and all that stuff. Like I think he played 19 minutes and change in that game. And then also be like, well, you should get him out there for those extra shifts at the end of the game so he can take a shot at an empty net. However, if he does score there, suddenly he's at 67 and then like maybe he scores two and suddenly like you don't have to have a decision in the 81 and 82 games. So I don't know.
Curtis wants to know, with Lyubushkin struggling, how do you rank their right side defenseman right now? And do we think that potentially Giordano could get in to the playoff lineup? I think it's going to take injuries for Giordano to play.
Yeah, I think so too.
He's been fine. It's been really nice. You know, I thought when he had that concussion, I didn't know if he was going to be able to play again. I wondered if he was going to end up on LTIR for the rest of the year or the rest of his career. Like
it's possible, James, if the injuries don't happen to other guys, that he doesn't play again.
Right. So it's been a really nice story that he's been able to get in and score a couple of goals. And you can see what he means in that dressing room. I mean, did you see the video of him? I think he was handing the belt off, right? And he said something like, "Welcome to the 1100 games club," basically. It just shows kind of like the clout he has and the career that he's had. And he's a guy that really kind of was late to becoming a superstar as well. And it's been a good story to see him And I think that if they run into injuries in the playoffs, that maybe he will become a good story in the playoffs. It's just that, remember last year, they leaned on him so heavily when they had injuries. And then by the playoffs, he was just running on fumes. So they just got to really manage his minutes. And
yeah, but so if we're ranking the right D, I think McCabe is obviously one.
And yeah, who would have thought
totally
that?
It's totally up in the air. Like, I wonder, obviously, they've been playing Brody on the left for a bunch now. I don't know. Maybe he ends up back on the right. Like, I don't know. Like, I just think, I know Brody has had a difficult season. I just think when the chips are down and they have to trust people to play big minutes in important situations, he's going to rank very high on that list. Because yeah, they just don't have other guys that like you would want to play ahead of him, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a different story if Liljegren and Edmondson had been healthy and playing really well. Like, that was actually a good pairing for them when they, I mean, how many games did they even get together? Five?
Yeah, the numbers were kind of all over the place, to be honest. But yeah, like Liljegren looked comfortable. But again, like that's not a pair that you're not going to want to play Edmondson huge minutes. Liljegren obviously can play big minutes, but he hasn't in the playoffs.
Well, that was kind of like a third pair, right?
Is what? Yes, yes. And the other thing is like Brody kills penalties. He's on their number one penalty killing unit. Like if I were to guess the averages for ice time, like who's going to lead, I would think it'll go Riley, Brody, McCabe. So
Brody number two, eh?
Yeah.
I like the way McCabe's playing lately. Like he gets that overtime goal, but not just that. Like there's something, it's funny. You never would have thought a Benoit McCabe pairing would be.
No, especially with McCabe on the right.
Yeah. That like wasn't on our radar at all. And I think we got to stop betting against Benoit. I think everyone needs to stop betting against him. Like he's in that contract they signed him to, he's going to look really good if this is what he ends up being.
You know what the good thing about him is? He knows exactly who he is and he does not try to be anything but that. And that's hard for a lot of players, I think.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And he covers for some of McCabe's freelancing, you know, when he...
McCabing? Yeah.
Yeah. When he goes a-wandering. Kyle wants to know, he says, call me crazy, but with full health, would Yarncroc, Kampf, and Marner not be an ideal defensive unit? If they're putting the stars on three different lines, the problem is it's a waste of Marner, right? Like you want to play Marner. Marner's setup abilities are top five in the league. You want to play him with guys who are going to put the puck in the net. You don't want to use him just on a shutdown line.
Yes, exactly.
That's like, that's the thing that's good with McMahon and Tavares is they both can really shoot the puck. You know, and Marner's got two options for guys that to feed.
Yeah. Yeah, he did like, and I just don't love him with Tavares. I don't know what it is.
Marner there with Tavares?
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I like the McMahon-Tavares thing. I think that's worked.
Huh.
But there's just something with Marner and Tavares that hasn't been as, yeah.
I thought they were going to try Domi Matthews Marner when Marner came back.
I still think that makes more sense than what they're doing. Obviously, it still leaves the question of who's the other center, but then you can go
Bertuzzi. Yeah.
Yeah,
Tavares, Nylander.
Yes,
but then your third line actually becomes your fourth line. Then in that world, right?
Yes, your third line becomes like Nyes, Holmberg, McMahon, and that's like you're right. That's
you forgot,
more like
you forgot line. Yarncroc. Unless you put
Yarncroc on. Yeah, right. No, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Unless you put Yarncroc with Kampf, and then that's like more. You could go Dewar, Kampf, Yarncroc if Reeves isn't playing.
Yeah, that makes some sense too. Yeah, I like that.
David says, in the playoffs, should we sit Nick Robertson for games 1, 3, and 5, and then he'll score a goal in games 2, 4, and 6? It's become a thing where he's sits a game and he comes in. And the thing that I think people underrate with Robertson is that he's just got a real fire to him and a real competitiveness. And like, he's just going to keep coming and keep giving you what he's got. And he's still got a lot to learn. And I think he's got a long way to go, but I like that about him. I like his personality, and I think people are giving up on him too early, you know, and that goes for last year. And I think even this year, it feels like people are writing him off too much.
You think so?
Some people just like feel like he's, I don't know. Like I think people wanted him to be like a 30 goal guy who's going to play in your second line. I don't think that's what he ever was going to be.
Yeah.
There's some disappointment there.
Well, I think part of that is obviously he's a Leaf prospect. He was their best prospect or second best prospect for a while. He scored all those goals in junior and it was like, oh my God, what is this guy going to be able to do? He comes in, he scores in that first series we mentioned and it kind of inflates it. But if you look like the past couple of years, A, he's not been healthy, and B, like when he plays, he doesn't play a lot. And so that tells you, that tells you what a coach thinks about a player, how much they play him. Like you see how much Holmberg has played and how many different situations, and like Nyes and McMahon. And obviously those guys are older than Robertson. Like Robertson is still, I think, 22. He's still really young. He's still very inexperienced. But you just wonder if like those flaws in his game are going to be not fatal flaws, but flaws that kind of keep him from being like a guy for a really good team. That's, I think, the question. Because like this is, he's having a good year and he's not going to be in their lineup when they're healthy. So what does that mean?
It means he's young. It means he's still got some things to figure out. But I think that I would punch a hole for him to be on their third line next year. Like, I think that would set my lineup in a way that, and part of what hurts him is they need another center, right? Like if they can get a third line center that has some offense and you can create, and that's kind of what I thought they were going to do with Domi coming into the year. And they did for some stretches of the, but Robertson's going to shine in, you know, put him on power play two, put him on a sheltered third line that can create some offense for you down the lineup. And I think he's going to be in a better position. So
yeah,
that can be something they look to address in the off season.
Well, he needs a new contract, if I'm not mistaken, this summer. So,
yeah, but I don't.
But he'll be cheap. He doesn't have a resume to demand much.
No, I think that's going to be like a 1 year or $1 million deal or something like that. And it's just, you know, give him another year to show what he can do. Although, I mean, his production now is starting to inch up to where maybe he can ask for a little bit more than that.
Well, maybe you try to get him on a little bit longer deal and keep him cheap. And then like, if he works out, you got a bargain. If he doesn't, you don't really care. And maybe you trade him.
I might be wrong on this, but I just think his ceiling is probably a third line guy. Right. So like, I don't think the upside is like sky high, but I also think that like a useful depth scoring piece who doesn't make a lot of money, who's young and still developing. I don't understand why there's always talk about moving him. Like it seemed like there was a lot of talk about at the trade deadline, like he was a piece that they could trade for something. And I don't see that.
I think that was fair. I think it's because they just don't have it or didn't have a ton of assets. And you looked at him and you're like, this guy might not play, isn't going to play, isn't playing much. To your point, maybe this is all he's going to be, where he's just like a 20 goal guy, which is like obviously valuable, especially when he's young and cheap. I don't think it was unreasonable. Like, I think I'm sure he wondered, like, I'm sure he hasn't been happy with how much he's played, how often he sat. I'm sure that stuff frustrates him too, to your point about like the fiery side of his personality. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, that's why I would be surprised from his perspective if he's going to commit to much term or anything, because he wants more of an opportunity. You know, it's funny. We're four games from the playoffs and the questions that we get are always, it's always like off-season stuff, right? Even at this time of year, it's not like, you know. So the next question is from David. David says, what does John Tavares' next contract look like? Which is not a question that they need to. I mean, I guess they can start talking extension in July, right? I think from the Leafs' perspective, I would try and. You need a hometown discount on this one, right? Like you need. Tavares has made his money. And maybe you have to give him a little bit of term to get it, but. You'd love to get him in. He's not going to sign for a Spezza or a Giordano number, but you'd love to get him in at a really low number. And because eventually he's going to be your third line center.
I mean, I don't know that he's going to have that much leverage on them, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I don't know that, like, I know, you know, there's been speculation about what it would be. Is it going to be 5 million or 6 million? It's like, I don't think he's going to have the credentials at that point. Like obviously he has the credentials, but he'll be,
I'd love to get him in at like 3 at that point.
Or not 37. He'll be, how old is he? 34. He'll be 35 at that point.
Yeah. I'd like to get him with something that starts with a 3 probably. And if you have to give him some years on it, then you just, I just don't know if I would like the idea of term. Yeah, but you know, the thing is that those contracts, they end up on LTIR or they get bought out or that you don't want to do a Marlowe thing where like you got to give up a first round pick to get rid of it. But if the AAV is low enough, then I think that there's something there that makes sense.
I don't think we can make any determinations about what they're going to do this summer or beyond that until we see what happens in the playoffs. Like, the obvious 100%. Right? Like, so.
Yeah. No, there's going to be, they lose in the first round. There's going to be pretty big changes. And there could be big changes this year and, you know, potentially even the year after. You know, Shanahan's got the 1 year left on his deal. There's a new president of MLSE. Michael Grange had a really good story at Sportsnet about all the stuff that's happening with the ownership. Like, there's a lot going on up at the top of the Leafs. And I know for a fact that ownership is not happy at all with the performance of the team in the playoffs. So
you don't say.
But they're pissed. Like, they're going to want, there's another really disappointing first round exit. They're going to want blood. So, and I don't know if like just firing the coach is enough. You know, I think they're going to want more than that. So, and you got a GM who's less than a year in. So, Perry wants to know what are the number one reasons? I think it would be number one reason. Anyway, what are the number one reasons Leafs fans should be optimistic? Oh, I see. Okay, I got the question wrong. What are the number one reasons Leafs fans should be both optimistic or pessimistic about this year's playoffs? Do you have an optimistic and a pessimistic?
Well,
optimistic for me is like they've played really well of late. Their record's really good, and like they've turned their season around.
Those are good reasons. Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
what was your optimistic?
They have the best goal scorer in the league.
Right.
Now,
I mean, they've been the highest scoring team in the league since January, right? Like, they not only do they have Matthews, but they've been getting secondary scoring too with Bertuzzi and Domi and McMahon and everybody else showing up.
Yes, that has been an issue, obviously, in the playoffs. So, I mean, what was the other part of the question?
What's the number one reason for pessimism about this year's playoffs? I know what mine is.
I mean, history.
Yeah, that's what. The number one reason for pessimism is they're the Leafs. Have you watched them play in the playoffs? That's the number one reason. I mean, if they ever have a run, I think you and I are going to be, even when they won the one round last year, I was like, okay, now what do we do?
Yeah.
You know, you've just seen them disappoint so many times that,
yeah.
Even last year, you know, they get through the first round. They don't play amazing against Tampa, but they get through. So credit for that. And then they're just not, then they look like the Leafs of previous years in the second round. So.
Yeah. But like, I always think about this, James, is like narratives are narratives until they're not narratives. Like, Steve Yzerman was not considered a winner until he was like 31. I think we touched on this at one point. And then suddenly they start winning and now he's like a winner and he's an amazing player. And you know what I mean? Like, It can
Ovechkin
change
too.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Jonathan asks, does Jonas think the pieces are fitting together now?
TBD. We'll see. I think you got to be careful about overrating this stuff, like this part of the regular season. We'll see. Like, the issues are still the issues. Like, they still don't have a good penalty kill. Although it's been better of late, their power play has been struggling defensively. They're still not a great team. Like, they're better than they were in the first half. Still not a great team. They still have struggled to close out games. The goaltending is a huge question mark in spite of the run. Like, the issues are still the issues, you know? And obviously,
well, and the question, need to see what can you outscore players. Those issues in the playoffs, right? Like, that's a hard thing to do. In past years, they've been one of, if not the highest scoring team in the league, and they have been able, the goals dry up in the playoffs. So, they're going to need some of those other fundamentals like penalty kill and defensive play to be better than they've been for long stretches this year.
Yeah. But like, to their credit and to, you know, the individuals, like a lot of players turned around their seasons. Like, a lot of those guys they brought in the offseason did not have good first halves. And a lot of those guys have turned it around, and credit to them. And that's made the offseason last year look a little bit better, but it will all be dependent on the playoffs. If those issues that we saw with the team coming into the year and we saw in the first half are issues in the playoffs, that will become an issue, obviously, in the aftermath. So we'll see how it goes.
Owen wants to know, what contract would you offer Steven Stamkos, who potentially could leave the Lightning and his contract does not have a contract, which is an interesting situation. I feel like he's going to stay at the end of the day, but there's kind of a game of chicken going on there between the team and Stamkos. And I know their cap situation is tight, as always. Is he in the same boat as a Tavares? I mean, he's having a better season than Tavares.
Yeah, I think he's a year younger than, or actually he's a year older than Tavares. Yeah, he's a year older than Tavares. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I'd have to think about the fit with him and Tavares, because like I think you would probably have to play them together. And I don't know.
I don't think I would play them together.
Well, then what are you doing?
That's a good question. I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't thought too much about what Stamkos would look like on. I mean, I think for the Leafs, if Stamkos wants to take a haircut because he wants to be here, then that gets interesting.
Sure.
Yeah. But if he wants every penny, then there's other questions in here about Domi and Bertuzzi. I don't think Bertuzzi is going to be back. I can see a world where potentially Domi comes back, but again, I don't think the Leafs are going to be able to give him every dollar that he can get on the free agent market. So it's going to be up to him whether he wants to take less to stay.
Yeah. I wonder what his value will be because like he is traditionally, I mean, of late, it's just 1 year contract after 1 year contract. He hasn't stayed with the same team 2 years in a row. I don't know.
So maybe if you offer him a little bit of term, like a 3 year deal or something, maybe you can get that number down a little bit.
Yeah. He's certainly become like
you can tell he loves being here.
Yeah, sure.
I got one more and it's a big one and it's just for you. And, no, it's not just for you. I'm just kidding. Darren says, were we wrong about Brad Treliving? I mean, even Ryan Reeves is playing well now.
We'll see.
I mean, certainly the offseason looks better than it did 2-3 months ago. That's for sure.
And that contract is still not a good contract. Like, let's not kid.
Yes. Yes. The thing that I would say about this is that, like, they're having a worse regular season than they did last year. They're going to finish with fewer points. It's been more uneven.
Yeah.
But you know, do you know what I mean? Can you fill in what the butt is? The butt is that the bet that they're making is that even if they're worse during the regular season, they were trying to construct a team for the playoffs, and that they feel like some of these greasy guys, Edmondson and Domi and Bertuzzi and some of the snot, which I hate. Snot is the new truculence. I feel like we've been talking about this crap ever since I've been covering the team. But this snot, even if they're only, you know, the eighth or the ninth best team during the regular season, which is probably about what they are, that they're constructed in a way that's going to make them more effective in the playoffs. Yep. So I don't know that we can evaluate that thesis until they play with this group in the playoffs. I mean, if Bertuzzi and Domi and Benoit and, you know, Lyubushkin and Edmondson and who are the other marquee moves? Am I forgetting anybody? You know, if Kampf plays well, if Dewar plays well, if all of these pieces that Treliving brought together work in the playoffs and they go on a run, then yeah, I think we evaluate what he did differently.
For sure. I mean, we're not beholden to anything. Like, we watch and observe, and if one thing is one thing, like, you know what I mean? Like, if something is true at one point, it doesn't have to be true later. If these additions work out, if not upgrading on defense, like in the way that we thought they should have, works out great. Like, good for them. Like, that's totally fine. Like, we don't care, right? Like, we're just going to evaluate based on what happens. Right.
I mean, we weren't wrong about Klingberg. I mean, like, he couldn't play, you know, he couldn't play all last year. And that was their, I guess Bertuzzi was their biggest signing, but Klingberg was their second biggest signing. I mean, they only had 19 million or whatever to spend last year, and they spent 4.2 of it on a guy who couldn't play on defense.
Yes.
And it left them at the deadline having to give up picks to bring in, you know, depth options to try and fill that hole that they didn't fill in the offseason. So it's not like there's a perfect slate there, but certainly there's some of the, I mean, you and I liked the Bertuzzi signing, and we thought Domi was a fine addition, and, you know, I thought Benoit was going to be a 7 or 8 defenseman and not be a factor. So that's been a positive. But, you know, it's not like we didn't like anything that they did. I mean, I thought that this team was going to be 7th or 8th best team in the league, and that's kind of what they are. So it's not like there's been a huge surprise here with anything that they've done.
Fair. Yeah, fair. I mean, a big part of their offseason was keeping their core. So we'll see how that works. TBD, I think, is like the name of everything right now. We need to see
that. I got one more, Jonas. Ian wants to know, did you see Dune 2 yet?
No, I'm just waiting for a day when I'm really tired, and then I'm going to go. Just kidding. Just kidding, James.
And then he adds, is Matthews the Kwisatz Haderach? That's a question for you.
Don't know what that means. I will take us out, James, and say that Frankie Corrado is appearing, like we mentioned last week, on the Athletic Hockey Show with Sean Gentile and Down Goes Brown on Wednesdays. That's today. Check them out. So we'll be back.
We got to get Frankie back on our show. Maybe next week we should have him on.
Yeah, well, we will be doing a playoff preview next week. So Thursday for that. TBD, James. Yeah, I think it will be Thursday. Obviously, there's travel involved potentially with the Leafs going to Florida potentially or maybe staying home. We'll see. So we'll be back next week. Thank you to Punch. Thank you to you, James. Thank you to everyone for listening. Goodbye.